Welcome everyone to today's podcast. Today we're going to be discussing something that I think is very important. However, it's something that most people don't like talking about and don't really pay enough attention to. I want to discuss insurance. And in particular, I want to discuss some of the biggest mistakes that are made by property investors when it comes to insurance, because there's a lot more to insurance than you would actually think. Oh yes, I went and got insurance on my property. It's so much more than that, because there's a lot of things that people don't know about insurances, and there's a lot of loopholes that insurance companies use to get out of paying for claims and things when they come in. So I want to discuss some of those things, and I want to really get into the nitty-gritty of some of the big ticket items that you need to take care of when taking out insurance, and not to the point where it costs you an absolute bomb either, because you can over-insure. You know, it's something that I think a lot of people really think that they're all over-insured, and some are and some aren't. And in some cases, I actually think people are under-insured. So let's get into it. Let's start first of all with landlord insurance. Now, landlord insurance is something that you take out on your investment properties. What does it actually cover? Well, what we're talking about with landlord insurance is it covers the excesses over and above the bond. So if your tenant skips and doesn't pay their rent, landlord insurance skips it. Pops in and covers those things. If your tenant does undue damage to your property over and above what the bond would normally cover, then landlord insurance kicks into gear there. Now, there's a few little tricks with landlord insurance. First of all, is that it generally doesn't cover anything externally to the house. Now, what am I talking about there? I'm talking mainly about the garden and landscaping and, you know, the garden shed and those sort of things. Normally doesn't cover those kind of items. So it's important when you're making your claim through to the insurance company, make sure that you use your bond money to fix up, you know, the big hole that the tenant's dog dug in the backyard, and use your landlord insurance money to fix up the door that was broken inside and those sort of things. I find that landlord insurance is generally a little bit slow to pay, but still well worth having. I mean, I've always had landlord insurance on all of our properties, and there's certainly been times when I've had to claim on that landlord insurance. And in some instances, where one of my properties is it's a business property, so it's more than just a rental house, has been broken into. And, the landlord insurance there is obviously going to kick into gear and will cover, you know, probably $10,000 worth of expenses, the damage and things that have actually been taken that have happened on that particular property. The next kind of insurance I want to talk about is construction insurance. Now, you might think, oh, well, I don't need construction insurance because I'm not building anything. Well, that's actually not true, because when we talk about construction insurance, it actually covers things like when you're renovating. Now, this is a really big loophole. You see, when you renovate a property, you actually need to notify the insurance company that you are renovating a property, because they switch the insurance from landlord to construction insurance, albeit for maybe 3 weeks or 3 months, whatever time it's taken to actually do that particular renovation, but they change it across. Now, your premiums probably go up ever so slightly for that period of time. But if you don't do that and something happens while you're going through the process of renovation, then you're not covered. And, you know, the thing could burn down and potentially you're not covered. So, you know, it's a really big area where there is a loophole there for the insurance companies, and you need to be aware of it. It's simply a notification, and, you know, you might end up paying an extra $5 a month or something or other for that period of time. But it does cover you if anything happens on that property, including, you know, if the thing burns down or anything else during that short space of time when you're actually going through and renovating. So it's something that you need to really look at the policies of your particular insurance company that you're going through, and because policies do change from company to company, and this is one of the big areas where they vary greatly. And what happens when with things like storm damage and theft and fire damage and these sort of things, the definition of those things are different depending on which insurance company you're with and even which policy you've actually taken out. I mean, the big one there obviously is storm damage. You know, what's storm damage? Is it storm damage? Is it flooding? Is it rising water? You know, there's all these different definitions of what that is. I mean, basically, you know, you want to be covered no matter what happens. I remember in the flood that happened in Brisbane a few years back, there was a lot of people that were left short with their insurance companies because, you know, they were either covered for storm damage, but then that wasn't considered storm damage because the dam was let go, basically, to in order to save the dam, and more water came out, so it actually was rising water. It wasn't as a result of storm, and therefore a lot of people that got absolutely flooded weren't covered for that because it wasn't a storm damage, and vice versa, you know, where you've got where you're covered for flood but you're not covered for storm damage. And it's a very fine line, I can tell you, as to what, you know, which one you are. But it's really, really important to understand, and it's important to understand up front which one you're actually taking out or whether you've got coverage for both. So don't be afraid to ask the questions. Make sure you talk to a broker about those questions. And honestly, a lot of brokers don't know what they're talking about in this area. It's an industry where a lot of people are quite inexperienced, and they say, oh yeah, you're covered for that. Don't take anybody's word. Make sure you get everything in writing so you can see in writing that you're covered for storm, you're covered for rising water levels, you're covered for flood, you're covered for absolutely everything that, you know, that you can think of that to go through that sort of thing. Theft, break-ins, all of those sort of things. And make sure you really identify that distinction between when you are in construction and you need a construction finance, or whether you're in landlord insurance and you need rental. Even if your property is vacant for a period of time, you actually need to notify the insurance company that that's the case. I remember a case in the newspaper up where I live. There was a guy who was in hospital, and he was in hospital for an extended period of time. When he came out of hospital, he actually stayed with his mates at his mate's place for a little while because he needed more care, and he lived alone. If he moved back home, he didn't have the care. So his mate was going to look after him until he recovered from hospital. Well, during that time while he was living in his mate's place, his home got broken into. And one of the insurance company loopholes was that they didn't cover the break-in and the damage that was done because he hadn't notified them that the property was actually vacant at the time. So, you know, it can get really tricky with that kind of stuff. So every time you have a change in the nature or the status of a property, whether it be your PPR even like that was, or a rental property, make sure that you inform the insurance company just to safeguard and make sure that, you know, you've got yourself covered in that respect. Another thing, while we're still on this sort of insurance, construction and building insurance, is that you want to make sure that you are covered to at least replacement value, because replacement value, if you're not covered to replacement value, then you can be deemed to be underinsured. Let me talk to you about a little bit of an example here. Let's say your property is worth, say it's a $500,000 house. Now, when we say value, this is something important to talk about as well. It's not the value of your property if you sold it, because obviously that includes the land. So you need to look at what the replacement value of your property is. So if your place burned down, we'll say, what would it cost to replace that house? And I'll get to contents in a minute, but what would it cost to replace that house? So let's say it had cost, $400,000 to replace and rebuild your home today. Then you want to be insured for $400,000. And we'll do the figures really easy. If you'll say that you're only insured for $200,000 and your place burns down, you are deemed to be underinsured. So that means they'll only pay half. Now, that's a very simple little example there. But it works even more so than that, because let's say you're insured for $200,000 and you know it would cost $400,000 to replace your property, and you get a fire that burns down the front garage, we'll say, Now, the claim is not going to be for a full $200,000. The claim might only be for, say, $20,000. But because you're deemed to be underinsured on the whole building and construction, then they won't even pay the $20,000, even though it's under the $200,000 that you're actually insured for. They'll only pay the amount that you are insured to. So in my example, you are half underinsured. You know, it should have been 400, you're insured for 200. So of that $20,000 claim, they're only going to pay half. They'll only pay the $10,000. That's actually how underinsurance works. And it works right across the board, whether it be for public liability, whether it be for contents, whether it be for building insurance or any of those things. Underinsurance works the same way. It's also the same when we talk about businesses and business equipment. Make sure that you've actually got the insurance that is for replacement value, because that's what you're actually going to need in order to get a full claim paid. Let's talk about public liability insurance. Now, public liability insurance covers basically someone coming onto your property and incurring a personal injury. So insurance companies love this kind of insurance because there's lots of loopholes. And one of the biggest loopholes that I've actually seen is for uninvited guests. Now, it's sometimes mandatory for businesses to be covered for tradespeople and you know, they cover themselves for people coming onto the property. But when you've actually got someone who comes onto the property that is that it is uninvited, like a burglar, for instance, then a lot of the public liability insurance doesn't actually cover them. So it's something that you have to make sure you've got it in writing in your policies that you are covered for uninvited guests. Otherwise, you can actually be in a lot of strife if someone comes onto your property and without an invitation, like a burglar or someone who's not supposed to be there, basically, the insurance company can refuse to pay the claim. So make sure that's in there. Building insurance is obviously the insurance on your property. So if it burns down, if it floods, if it's whatever, that's the insurance that covers all of those sorts of things. And we've already gone through some of the little tricks of the trade there when it comes to understanding the terminology like flood and storm damage and those sort of things. Natural disasters is another one that comes to mind that can be a little bit tricky. This is where, what's considered to be a natural disaster. And a lot of people with the Christchurch earthquakes, they were actually not insured for earthquake. They were insured if the thing burnt down, but they weren't insured for damage due to earthquake. And a lot of people lost a lot of money. And it's very sad when these big disasters happen. And, you know, you think you're insured and you've paid really good premiums all over the years, and then only to turn around and say, sorry, you're not insured. I know one of my students actually owns something like 26 properties in Christchurch when the earthquake happened, and she's actually moved out here to Australia now because she just couldn't face rebuilding her portfolio again in Christchurch. So a lot of those properties she just had to walk away from. So she went from being very wealthy and living off her passive income quite comfortably to having to really struggle because some of the properties that she had weren't insured. Now, she thought they were insured, but they actually weren't. Some were, some weren't. And that's the quirky thing. You know, some are insured with one company and you're covered, and then with others, they're not. And one of the questions I get asked all the time, so who should I be insuring through? Look, it's not a matter of that. There's policy changes that happen on a weekly basis. It really needs to make sure that you're dealing with a really, really good broker, and they really know their stuff when it comes to property insurances and what covers what in what circumstances. The last thing you want is someone who's only new to the industry and really doesn't know the differences between these things and gives you misinformation, because unfortunately, you know, they're not worth suing afterwards when you've lost a $300,000 property and you still owe, you know, $200,000 on it, and the insurance company pays you nothing. That's a debt that you're going to have to then pay for the life of the debt, even though you haven't got any compensation on the property or any income coming in on that particular property. Contractor insurance is also important. When we talk about contractor insurance, you actually need to have a specific coverage that covers the contractors that come onto your property. Now, it's a little bit like the construction insurance, and a lot of the construction insurance actually has the tradespeople and all of those people actually covered in what they actually, you know, when they come onto the property and those sort of things. But you need to make sure that that is actually the case. So when you're taking out your insurance, again, talk to an insurance broker who really knows their stuff, and make sure that you're actually got those things taken care of, because product liability and things like that for your contractors. What happens if they're on your site and then some of the tools get stolen, for instance? Are they covered under their insurance? Are they covered under your insurance? Are they covered under property damage? So, they're all the things that you need to make sure that you can, that you're actually covered for that sort of stuff. When do you actually take out insurance is also something that's very important, because in most cases, in fact, everywhere except for New South Wales, sorry, except for Western Australia, you actually have, you take responsibility for the property as soon as you sign the contract of the property. So when you sign a contract onto a property, you take responsibility of it. Now, obviously, in all the states where you've got conditional contracts, you may have a get out of jail card, for example, where the get out of jail card basically says, you're still covered by finance clause or building and pest inspection. So obviously, if something happens to the property and burns down, then you could say, oh well, I'm not going to buy the property because it's not going to value, and I can't get my finance. So it's still the responsibility of the existing person. However, if you're in a situation where you've gone unconditional on the property, so that means you have to buy it, then you better make sure you've actually got a cover note or an actual insurance policy taken out on that property, because if anything happens, it's actually your insurance policy that needs to cover those things. Now, again, in the Brisbane floods that happened a few years ago, what I did see was that a lot of fighting was done over insurance companies where the property was actually under contract at the time of the floods. So this is something that you need to make sure that you're taken care of. You need to make sure that as soon as you are unconditional on that contract, you've got insurance in place. Now, I actually take out a cover note as soon as I sign a contract on a property, and then I take out I make it an actual contract and pay my premium when it goes unconditional. Very important to make that happen, because you're responsible for the property in that period of time. Now, I did say in every state except for Western Australia. And in Western Australia, the state laws are different. And in Western Australia, it's covered when when you actually settle on the property. That's when you take responsibility for that property from an insurance perspective. So make sure you've got that covered. Another thing that I want to talk about here is life insurance. Now, life insurance is really not understood enough when we start talking about properties and things like that. And you might say, well, why are you talking about life insurance when we're talking about real estate? Well, why I'm talking about it is because you actually need to make sure that your life insurance, if anything happens to you, you've got enough life insurance to cover the debts that you actually have on your property. So if you think about it, if you're the main breadwinner and you have an accident or something or other, and you die. Well, I mean, that's what life insurance is talking about. You're no longer here. So you're gone. Could your family actually afford to earn enough income to support your properties? Now, negative gearing is something that, as you know, I don't like. I don't like it at all. However, if you've got negatively geared investment properties, that's money that the family then has to actually earn in order to be able to sustain that loan and to be able to sustain, the repayments on that loan and all of those things. So you got to think about it and you go, okay, well, if something happened to me, then could the family continue on and cover the debts of the properties? So it's always a good idea to sit down with your your life insurance broker, go through obviously what they'd like to insure you for is the premium, everything, because that's what they get paid on. But it's better then to step back and go, all right, well, what do I actually need? And I think from a life insurance perspective, something that in most cases, enough to cover the debts is always a good idea from a life insurance perspective. Obviously, if you're insuring the non-breadwinner, then perhaps something lesser there could be looked at, where if you're the main breadwinner and it's your spouse that goes, then having a lesser amount would still be economical, I suppose. Now, when you look at how much to insure in that instance, you've got to think, okay, well, if the other person wasn't there, what would you need? What extra money would you need to maybe employ a housekeeper, or to employ someone to look after the kids, or whatever else that might be? And, then have that pot of money there as life insurance just in case. I guess the other one that leads on from that is income protection insurance. So this actually protects your income stream. Now, I think everybody, unless they've replaced their income already, should have income protection insurance, because even if it's only temporarily that you're incapacitated and unable to work, the income protection insurance kicks into gear and basically pays you between 70 to 75% of your current income while you are incapacitated and unable to work. Now, there's a few tricks with this as well. The first trick is, you've got to think, well, okay, how much reserves have I got? Like, if I couldn't work tomorrow, how long could I comfortably live before I would really need that income starting to come in? Because the longer period that is, the lower your premium's going to be. So you might say, oh, look, I could live for a month quite comfortably without any income, but then I really need that income coming in. Or you might go, no, I can live for 3 months before I would need that income coming in. Or, and if you're in a situation where you're really living paycheck to paycheck and you have to have the money coming in every single week, well, your premium there is then going to be a lot higher than the person who can survive for a month before they need the income protection coming in, or for someone who can survive 3 months before the income protection needs to start coming in. So, I always looked at income protection insurance when I was back in the accountancy practice. And I thought, oh, look, I don't really need it. What could possibly happen to me where I couldn't work, I was a little naive in my thinking, but I did have income protection insurance. And lo and behold, I'm out playing golf with my young children at the time, and my son accidentally, obviously, hits me in the mouth with a golf club, and I break my jaw. Well, it's pretty hard to be an accountant and talk to people when you have a broken jaw. So I actually had to claim on my income protection insurance, as I was, out of work there for quite a bit of time with my jaw being wired together. So I think, there's always going to be circumstances where potentially you are unable to do your income stream of whatever that actually is. So if you can get income protection insurance, good idea to have. Another one that's quite tricky and a lot of people don't know about is workers' compensation insurance. Now, you might think, well, I don't employ anybody. Why do I need workers' compensation insurance? Well, there's actually, again, another little loophole here. If you have somebody who works for you on a semi-regular basis, like a babysitter or a cleaner or a gardener or someone like that that comes in every week, you actually have to take out home workers' compensation insurance, because they work for you on a semi-regular basis. If they get sick or injured on your premises, then you're actually up for their workers' compensation. Something a lot of people don't know and don't realize, but it is, that's the way it works. So make sure you've got that workers' compensation insurance. It doesn't cost a lot. It's only, a few dollars a week, but it's something that if you have anybody that comes in and works for you on a semi-regular basis, like a bookkeeper or someone like that, you actually may need to take out home workers' compensation insurance. There's actually a case in the courts at the moment where a babysitter slipped on some tiles and is suing the people who own the property for workers' compensation. Now, it hasn't gone through the courts yet. It's an interesting case and I'm watching it. So I'll let you know how that one actually goes. And the last thing that I want to talk about when we talk about insurance is contents insurance. Now, I will take out contents insurance even if I've got a vacant, even if I've got a property that I rent with no furniture in it. You may go, why would you do that? Well, the first thing is that the building insurance only covers the building. It doesn't cover all of the soft furnishings. Things like blinds, curtains, light fittings, those sort of things are not covered by your building insurance. So simply adding on, you know, a $10,000 contents insurance policy to your building policy doesn't cost very much. And it does cover, if anything happens, it covers off on all of those things that, you know, that the building insurance simply doesn't cover. So make sure that, you know, you take that out. Now, the other thing with contents insurance is that when you take out contents insurance, particularly on your homes, but also on your investment properties, but on your homes particularly, make sure that you are covered for anything that you take out of the home and use externally to the home. Why am I making a big deal out of this? Because I've seen some very sad cases where, in particular, one guy had was playing golf and his ball hit somebody in the head when he was playing golf. Now, he ended up suffering a lot of financial loss as a result of that because he got successfully sued for $2.6 million. And he lost everything. He lost absolutely everything. It took 10 years to get through the courts, but he lost absolutely everything. And the thing that could have saved him was that if he had contents insurance that covered the external use out of his home of those golf clubs, then the insurance company would have paid. But he didn't. And it is, you know, you might be down the park having a picnic and a gust of wind comes along, picks up the picnic table and dumps it on some kid's head. Well, they can sue you for everything that you own in your name. So it's something that you have to pay a great deal of attention to. And it's something that's totally overlooked on a regular basis. So guys, I hope that's helped. I'm going to ask you a little bit of a favor. What I'd like you to do, if you've enjoyed this podcast or any of my other podcasts, please go onto iTunes and make a comment. Give me a rating, because I have thousands and thousands of people that listen to my podcasts every week, but they don't give me a rating. So I'd really love you to get on there and give me a rating, give me your comments, and I'm going to be giving away some prizes. I'm going to give away some books and send them out to people randomly if you get on there and give me a rating and give me a comment. So thank you so much for listening. I will be back again to talk to you very soon. Now, don't forget also to jump onto my website, www.iloverealestate.tv. There's lots and lots of really good stuff on there, lots of free articles, lots of free videos and all sorts of stuff on there on lots of different topics as well. So jump on there and have a look and subscribe to the iTunes so you get my podcast every week. That's it from me, guys, and I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on another completely different topic. Bye for now.